Thank you, Mary, for your magic. All right, I'll start over. Aren't you blessed? You may recall in my earlier talk about compassion, I spoke from my childhood experience with my caregiver, how she rode the trolley car across town with a birthday cake for a little boy as an act of compassion. We don't even need to know the definition of compassion to recognize it when someone shows it to us. We just know through the person's act that they took our pain away. Today, I'm going to talk about not needing to know the definition of compassion to recognize it when someone shows it to us. Both the quotes that I'm going to read today are from Wes Angioli. And remember that this place we share is the earth as a whole. Our movements, our actions, our moods, our beliefs, our values, our teachings, and learning are connected and imprinted in the journeys of those we may not know, even those that live on the opposite sides of the earth. There have been times in my life when I was so fragile and broken that I was in danger of losing my life. And in those times, the universe conspired to remind me that my life actually mattered. Some of you know that I'm a person in long-term recovery, and the journey of recovery started for me 17 years ago, this month. It was the 27th day of May, Memorial Day weekend, and I began the journey in such incredible pain. I was so disappointed that God hadn't taken my life. I left part of myself, I think at the time, perhaps, the best part of myself in Vietnam before I came home. So I was broken for quite a number of years. I can remember spending the last 4 years before I said this two-word prayer, help me. Living in my car. I'm one of those very special people that back then, every time I went to the car dealer, I traded down. It was an extraordinary relationship I had with this man. I remember how strangely he always looked at me. And the criteria for my car was, how much cash can I get when I make this trade? And how much of my personal stuff will this car hold? Because I wanted room to sleep in it too, you know. Some of my homeless friends used to say that I was a high-bottom homeless guy because they said, you can sleep in your car, but you can't drive your house. And I was that guy. In any case, I woke up in my car that morning, the 27th day of May, 2001, and I wept in pain. I said, help me, because it's all I could utter. It's all I could get out. In that two-word prayer, I completely submitted myself to my higher power. I didn't realize just how powerful those two words could be until, in hindsight, I realized that I took the first three steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I made a decision to turn my life and will over to the care of God as I understood Him. I remember saying, okay, what do I do? Now what? And Spirit began to guide me and began to speak to me. I was told that I needed to go and clean myself up. I hadn't showered in a couple of weeks. And I only had one more change of clothes left My whole car was full of all the dirty clothes that I owned. And so I was led to go to the mission in Grand Rapids where I was. And I remember saying to God, they won't let me in. And I was reminded in that moment of a passage from Exodus where God tells Moses, when Moses tells him he can't go speak to the Pharaoh, he doesn't speak well. And God told Moses, I'm the God that made your lips. You go speak to that Pharaoh. And so I went to the mission and I knocked on the door. And they opened the door and said, what do you want? And I said, I want to take a shower. And they said, yeah, come on in. And much to my surprise, I was welcomed. And I got to take a shower and a shave. And it had been a couple of weeks, so I was very pleasantly surprised I didn't clog the pipes. Now I walked out of there clean with a bag of dirty clothes. And I said, what do we do now? And I was led to go to this church I'd been to a couple of times and knock on the door. And I didn't know it was Sunday. I didn't know what day it was. I knew it was early in the morning. So I went there, knocked on the door. This man opened that I knew. He was an usher there. And he gave me a tank of gas so I could get to the VA in Battle Creek. And he directed me there. And he reached in his pocket and he started to give me cash. And I said, don't give me cash. I'll never get there. Please, just give me some gas. And he was kind and he wasn't judgmental. And he said, you know, my father was a World War II veteran and he drank himself to death. He said, and I know your pain. And so I drove to Battle Creek, and I remember opening the door to the emergency room, and the lights were all off, and it was Memorial Day weekend. There was no one there. And I walked around for a while trying to find a person. And finally, I found this very small Filipina nurse. And I'm not a very tall man. I'm 5'9". She was half of my size. And I was a little thinner then because I was on the cocaine diet. But she said, okay, what do you want? And I said, I need some help. And I told her that I'd been drunk or high since I got back from Vietnam, and it had been quite a while. And she took me into a room and took my blood pressure, kept looking at me and looking at the machine, looking at me, looking at the machine. And she said, well, I think you need something to eat. When did you eat last? I said, I don't remember. So she got me a little bag lunch. And, you know, today I would be suspicious of a bag full of food that somebody pulled from a desk drawer. Then, you know, I was grateful. And so I ate the food. And she took my blood pressure again. She said, look, I'm going to send you over to our detox unit. And she gave me a map, wrote down the building number, circled it, told me what floor to go to. And she said, whatever they tell you, just tell them that emergency sent you. So I went over there and had a little trouble again finding a person because it's Memorial Day weekend. This is a federal facility, and they take their holidays very seriously. And I finally found a guy, and I said, hi, I'm here for detox. He said, go away. I said, no, emergency sent me. He said, go away. Nobody's here to help you. I said, no, emergency sent me. And I kept saying that until I wore him down, until he saw I wasn't going to go away, and the only answer I had for him was the one that was given to me. Finally, he just said, okay, pulled out a rubber stamp, stamped the piece of paper I had, told me to go sit down in this room. And that started my journey of detox and of recovery. I ended up getting 28 days of treatment. They didn't want to give it to me. They didn't want me there. They made that very clear. In fact, when the staff came back, they tried to make me leave. And I remember telling them, no, I'm here because I need help. And they kept telling me, we're not going to help you. And I kept saying, no, I'm here because I need help. And finally, as I was, because they threw me out, told me to leave the building, leave the grounds. And I saw this man sitting behind a big desk in one of the private offices, and I thought, this guy's got to be important. The desk is bigger than my car. And he was sitting there, and I said, I had remembered that I parked next to this beautiful, shiny, green Jaguar. And so I said to him, is that your shiny green Jaguar out there? Why, yes, it is. I said, well, I'm going to break into it. I'm going to set myself on fire in your car. Or you can help me. And so they admitted me. And that's how my journey of recovery began. And the VA has become a little bit more helpful since then. Not a lot, but a little bit more helpful since then. And I can remember once I began to have some clear thoughts, I felt that I needed to go back and thank this woman in the emergency room. And so every time I got a chance, I walked back over there to thank her, and I could never find her. And finally, the day I was leaving, they said, what are you here for? I said, well, I'm here to thank this wonderful woman. Well, what did she look like? What was her name? I said, I don't remember her name, but she was about this tall. I'm sure you don't have a lot of women like this. And she was Filipina. And they said, we don't have any women like that here. That's no one that works here. And I realized that the universe had conspired to turn my life around because I had been willing to ask for help. I hadn't shared that story here because people that are in long-term recovery don't look like they're in recovery anymore, and there's some shame that goes with it, some stigma. And, you know, I thought twice about bringing that to you. But I realized that I had no better example for the universe conspiring to save someone's life than that. And so, there you go. There's one other quote I want to share with you. And this is what this woman did for me. Go and love someone exactly as they are and watch how quickly they transform into the truest, greatest version of themselves. When one feels seen and appreciated in their own essence, one is instantly empowered. I would add to that when they're seen and appreciated as they are right in the moment. Thank you.